Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola, and our guest today is Rodney Martin. He is the director of the Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. And Rodney spoke earlier about the Holocaustianity, and we need to consider that we now have a menorah at the White House during Christmas instead of a manger scene. Another point is that they tried to pull this 6 million scam after World War I, and it didn't fly. So they did it again after World War II, and it seems to have taken on a life of its own. All righty. Please continue from where you left off.
That in the chat room about what about Treblinka? Treblinka was a transit camp. It only operated less than 1 year. Deanna, it operated for about 8 months. From July of 1941, if I remember right, it opened in July of 1941 and it closed about 8 months later. It was a transit camp only. It wasn't even very large. That's been proven. I mean, attempted claims have been made that they were exterminating people there. But what's interesting is there are people that are alive and well today that went through Treblinka. Now, if you're sending people there for the purposes of exterminating them, people would go there, you know. People check in, but they don't check out if it's an extermination center. So, you know, there's just too many people that are walking, are alive and well, that were at Treblinka. They went through there, they were processed, and they went to other subsequent camps. And that is something that has to be, let me pause here for a minute, because the camps in Germany, again, were operated in accordance with German law. There were rigorous German law. People were sentenced to, time, 6 months, 8 months, a year, or whatever. They were prisoners. They were served their time, and they were released. If you look at the old World at War series, which was done in the 1960s, I have that series. You know, I don't particularly like the bit, you know, the political slant on it, but the reason why I own it is that series made an effort to go and interview a lot of the people that lived during the Third Reich, and of course, you know, you got some of the other Allied people on there, but you're able to see their interviews and get their perspective. You know, I would have asked different questions, but in those interviews and some of the other interviews that were conducted in the 50s and 60s, you'll see camp inmates, and it says they were sentenced on X date and they were released. And the key thing you got to look at is they were released. And then they went on about their lives in the Third Reich, and they had jobs and whatever, and lived out their lives and lived to, you know, happy old age and passed away and lived their lives. And the perception is, once people went to a concentration camp, they were there until they were exterminated or shot, or the Allies graciously liberated them. That is factually incorrect. It is absolutely incorrect. And the same goes for, you know, Treblinka. That has been debunked. It only operated for 8 months. It was a transit center where people were processed and assigned and shipped to other camps. And there's lots of people that are around walking today. A lot of them are, you know, right in Los Angeles, right near where I live, who were at Treblinka and processed there and are telling the story. But it's interesting that if you ask them, you know, they were at Treblinka, they were there, was Treblinka extermination? Yes, it was an extermination center. Well, how do you account for yourself? And they'll call you some of the worst names and walk away. Finally, in this New York Times article, before we switch over to the Deutsche Welle article, and some of the, it talks about, now, bear in mind, Deanna, they are representing new information. They talk about 3,000 camps in Berlin, which means a lot of those camps would have been bombed. During the Allied bombing campaign, they would have been overrun and documented by the Red Army. There's no reports in Red Army reports about 3,000 camps in Berlin. They openly admit they count Jewish homes. Bear in mind, the Jewish hospital in Berlin was still operating when the Red Army arrived in April 1945.
Right. All righty. We do need to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs. Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to SantaBarbaraBells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. SantaBarbaraBells.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundations, whose website is wvfoundations.org. You were talking about the hospital, the Jewish hospital in Berlin, where people lived throughout the war, had plenty of food, and were just fine.
Yes, Deanna, and again, I'll get into this as time permits. Again, I can't stress this enough. Jews in Germany operated in accordance with German law. There was the Nuremberg Laws, and we're going to talk a little bit about Wannsee because that's important to note, because people that promote the Holocaust as being factual and as a German, actual German program of extermination hang their hat on Wannsee, and they hang their hat on Himmler's so-called secret speech, and I'm going to talk about those because those do not hold up, and they would not hold up under any semblance of rules of evidence or such. If Nuremberg had been a real court, if we were to convene a trial today, it just wouldn't hold up under the rules of evidence. And that's why Justice Jackson was chosen to go over there, because the other Supreme Court justices, they spoke out. They spoke out along the same tenor as Senator Taft spoke out, and I have him featured on my website, is what he said about Nuremberg. But anyway, getting back, there was a comment in the chat room. Well, who died? I've never said that nobody died in camps and nobody died. Quite the opposite. People did die in those camps, and there people were shot, people were abused. But interesting, as you know, Deanna, I'm a data person. I like to study data. I like to study records. And somebody makes a representation to me, if it's believable, I say, well, that sounds credible. I mean, you know, like, based on what I know. But if someone makes an atrocious claim, and I was reading this article, one of the articles it talks about, and again, we're talking about new information. It says right in the, towards the bottom of it, what you would call the kicker, which is supposed to really gin you up and get your emotions going, an article, it says, and of course, the largest camp, 500,000 people, was the Warsaw Ghetto. Well, Deanna, that's not new information. Everybody knew the Warsaw Ghetto, we all knew about. I mean, we've known about that since, you know, 1939, 1940. The Warsaw Ghetto wasn't even established by the Germans. The Warsaw Ghetto was the Jewish quarter. It's where they lived until they were, the Warsaw Ghetto was ordered to evacuate in accordance and resettle in accordance with German policy. So, you know, and as it turns out, the Germans weren't far off because they were stockpiling weapons and they were, you know, they rebelled. And when the Red Army, you know, came close to, it was approaching Warsaw. So, I mean, we know that this is bogus. This article is bogus. But that gives you an example, what I call the kicker. The largest camp was the Warsaw Ghetto. Well, that's not new information. You know, everybody knew about the Warsaw Ghetto. They knew about it in 1939. And it wasn't even a German creation. But anyway... as I said, you know, I'm a data person, so I like to actually study data and get into the, you know, get into it and see and test it to see if it, what's being represented is factual. And it was, and you know, records of the time, and the Germans kept meticulous records. And getting back to saying, you know, who died? I've never said people didn't die, and I would never say that. That's foolish. Lots of people died, not just Jews. There were gypsies that died, you know, that were locked up, people that broke German law. Bear in mind, the National Socialists fundamentally changed German society, and they were fundamentally changing European society. So there were, the decadence, that was essentially being outlawed. And the population embraced this new society. So it wasn't just Jews that were being locked up, traitors were being locked up, moral decadence, those were being locked, people of moral decadence was being locked up as well, but they weren't being exterminated. And when you start looking at the spikes in death, there's a direct correlation between the spikes in death and Allied bombing, with the supplies being cut off and being, you know, the supply lines being cut off, and the Allied bombing and the disease outbreaks in these camps. That's when you start seeing a spike in the deaths in these camps, which is about 1943 and really escalating in 44. The Red Cross was at Belsen when the British arrived, and the Red Cross representative and the camp commandant went out to the British and met them and said, you know, hey, we have a typhus outbreak here. The Red Cross, there are Red Cross reports on these camps. The Red Cross revisited these camps. So, this is, you know, what people have been told when you mentioned earlier, someone that had never, you know, been exposed to revisionism and such, what would I tell them? Well, one, there is a plethora of records, about these camps. The Red Cross knew about them. The Allies knew about them. They were flying reconnaissance planes. There's aerial photography over Auschwitz, and obviously nobody believed at the time that there was a systematic policy of exterminating peoples all over Europe. And certainly it is very much credible to believe that when you have an extensive penal system and camp system going on, and the Allies are eradicating your supply lines, your rail lines and such, the ability to supply those camps with both food and medical supplies is going to happen. And when that happens and you have a disease outbreak in those camps, bad things are going to happen. And I can assure you, when you have bodies piling up that are full of, typhus and cholera and such, you have no choice but to burn those bodies. So yes, were there incineration devices at those camps? Absolutely yes. Now, then people will say, well, what about that Zyklon B? Well, yeah, there was Zyklon B. Absolutely, it was used as a disinfectant. But absolutely, the first nation to use Zyklon B on human beings was the United States Border Patrol at Brownsville, Texas, and that can be looked up. You can actually look that up on the internet, actually. So, I would encourage people to actually not rely on information from Hollywood. But to, you know, take an afternoon and actually do some research, and not just take my word for it, but to actually do some look at a variety of sources. There have been European revisionists that have done outstanding work on the scientific side. I look at this much more from what I would call a legal, procedural, and logical basis, and the story just doesn't hold up. Now, if I could just go on, I think the article, like I say, the New York Times article is an attempt to rebrand the Anna of the Holocaust, because it's been, I think that it is beginning to, it was beginning to unravel. And so what do you do when your brand is damaged and sales are dropping? You rebrand it and you come out with a whole bunch of, a new marketing campaign. And when you read this article, I had to read it again a second time to see if it was really that bad, and it was worse. As you read the article where they're talking about new information, it's worse than we thought. It becomes a hodgepodge. At one point, about halfway through the article, they just start throwing all sorts of baseless allegations. And of course, when they get to the point that, oh, and the largest one was the Warsaw Ghetto, and then they talk about the Jewish homes in Berlin, you can tell that they cannot substantiate 40,000 camps without, you know, basically counting the people's own homes, the hospitals, the POW camp, things that were just clearly could not even be remotely counted as a camp. Again, I'm going to switch gears here and talk about, in Germany, there was specific laws that talked about how Jews and Mischlings would be governed. That was the Wannsee. That was discussed at Wannsee, and that was in accordance with the Nuremberg laws. And when you get into discussions of the Holocaust and people that promote the Holocaust as a fact and as an official sanctioned government policy, of course, they can never produce anything other than, you know, in the discussions I've had, except for two elements. They'll say, well, they had a meeting at Wannsee, and there's the Wannsee Protocol. And then they'll talk about Himmler's secret speech. Well, let's talk about Himmler's secret speech first, because that one is all, they always promote that to be the most damaging. And of course, there was a speech in Posen, and in it, they basically say that Himmler admitted to genocide, but it was a secret speech. If you listen, there's an audio recording available. People can go online and get it, and I've listened to it. But if you listen to it, it in itself is kind of odd. And it has been, you know, you can make the case that it was tampered with. You can never find what can be considered a true, authenticated, original recording. All we have is what the Allies said is their re-recorded version. Well, that would not hold up. And what is interesting is Robert Wolf, who was a supervisory, and they say that Himmler is using the word exterminate. In that speech. Well, bear in mind all the translators in post-war Germany were all Jews. And of course, that has been the primary word that they like to use. You know, they use the word extermination camps. They love that word extermination. But if you use the proper translation, there's been a debate about translation. His word was not extermination. The proper text would have been root out or remove from Europe, which would have been in accordance with the proper policy that the Germans were pursuing of removing the Jews from Europe. What Robert Wolf, who is a supervisory archivist who supervised the captured German records at the National Archive, has finally conceded that they actually had Himmler's working notes, his handwritten notes, for that speech, and that he did not use the word extermination. He used the word evacuation.
Amazing. All righty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Our Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. Somebody in the chat room asked earlier, if the Germans really wanted to kill the Jews, why didn't they just shoot them? That would be much more efficient and cheaper than the alternative. And in my own thoughts and stuff that I've read, if they meant to exterminate them, they would not have tattooed them. Instead, in the camps, they provided libraries, hospitals, infirmaries, kitchens, theaters, swimming pools, or brothels, if you're talking about the largest camp at Auschwitz.
Well, let's talk. There was some discussion in the chat room real briefly about Auschwitz. Auschwitz was not built by the Germans. It was an existing camp facility. It had been built by the Poles. It had been built by the Polish military. The Germans just, reutilized that. It actually served, as a basis for labor for a large German synthetic facility. And then in 1945, during a military briefing, and I think it was Manstein, actually. I'm sure it was Manstein, was giving Hitler a briefing and told him that the Red Army had overrun Auschwitz, which was their last operating synthetic facility. Hitler's reaction was, oh, so now let's put that reaction in perspective. If there was some sort of, mass, secret plan to, that was an extermination facility, you would think that there would be a much a different reaction than, oh. And that was literally, and Manstein documented that, in his, memoirs that, he was giving them the briefing as to where the situation was on the Eastern Front, that the Red Army had overrun Auschwitz, and he said, oh, You know, it wasn't like, oh, I hope, you know, Himmler is, you know, taking care of things and, you know, everything there. It was, there was literally no reaction. And, you know, furthermore, there had been, memos and, it had been uncovered quite the obvious. There was, well, there's no order from Hitler to eradicate the Jews because, you know, he did everything verbally. That's what the people, the proponents of this Holocaust, fraud says. Well, quite the opposite. There was actually orders from Hitler saying that, you know, that there was, you know, there was not going to be any decision on the Jewish question until after the war. So, you know, that kind of counteracted there during the wartime that the Germans were actually rushing to secretly annihilate and to exterminate, that there was actually a German policy during the war to exterminate the Jews. You know, when there's actually German officials, and I believe it was Goebbels that had made that statement, Hitler's policy was that the war was first, that, you know, they would address the Jewish issue after the war, that the, you know, the primary policy was the resettlement and the, you know, evacuation and keep them in camps and ghettos until the war was won. Of course, that was not to happen. Let me finish up with this Posen conference, because the tape, the actual audio tape, there's considerable evidence to show that it has been tampered with, because when you listen to it, it's a hodgepodge. Himmler begins speaking on one subject matter, talking about the nobility of SS men, and then all of a sudden there's this discussion about extermination, and of course the translation is very suspect. But then his handwritten notes on the speech have been openly, Richard Wolff has authenticated that his handwritten notes say that he used the word evacuation. He never used the word extermination. So I'm not sure that one can, you know, that anybody could hang their hat on this dubious Posen speech as saying that that was an admission that there was a policy of extermination. Also, if Posen's speech was such a secret, you know, why would somebody admit to exterminating, you know, having this policy of extermination, which is supposed to be a secret, in a meeting of a couple of 200 people, you know, and none of which, you know, subsequently after the war, many of almost all of them lived after the war, confirmed that he said that, you know, in subsequent interviews. Admiral Dönitz was at this meeting, at the second Posen speech. My understanding is, I think in the second one where this was brought up, Admiral Dönitz was, has been cited as being there, I believe. If I remember right, I don't have that second one open on my computer right now. I'm multitasking. But none of the Reichsleiters and Gauleiters were at these meetings who subsequently lived. I know that Paul Jordan, his name was Paul Jordan, he was interviewed for years up until he died in the 1980s. He never confirmed, and he was present at that meeting, never confirmed that Himmler talked about exterminating Jews at the Posen speech. So that leaves you with Wannsee, the infamous Wannsee conference. And of course, a lot of what people know about Wannsee now, Deanna, is this HBO movie, which was, you know, done by, you know, Jewish Hollywood, which was called, the movie was called Conspiracy. And HBO did it about 10 years ago. And it was kind of a documentary type. Actors played the various Wannsee participants. And it basically, the way it was set up is, it just portrayed them arriving at the conference, and it's, you know, the viewer is like sitting there watching this meeting unfurl, and they're talking about it. However, you know, that's easy to portray and spin. So it's easy for what I would call a low information or lazy person to come away after watching that movie, that show about Wannsee, to say, oh yeah, boy, they had a meeting, and they, sure enough, they wanted to exterminate the people. You know, the problem is...
it is amazing that people get their history from Hollywood. And didn't they make a movie on Nuremberg years and years ago? And that's what people think about what happened at Nuremberg.
Oh, sure. But if you actually watch the transcripts, and actually, you know, like Hermann Göring, he made Jackson look like an absolute idiot, a blithering idiot.
Right. Have to take a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to TerraVim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Rodney Martin, the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. We haven't asked for any calls, but we do have a caller. Should we go ahead and take a call?
Real briefly, before we take the caller, Deanna, the reason why I focused on the Posen speech and the Vancey Protocol is because those are two. I like, you know, when I hear people make an make a statement, well, there was this, there was a government program to kill the Jews, you know, to kill the Jews, because the Jews act like they were the only ones that were targeted, you know, in this fraudulent scheme. Well, let's see your evidence. Well, they'll bring up the confessions. Well, the confessions do not stand up to any rules of evidence, because those confessions were coerced, and they were coerced, and they were achieved under torture. The commandant of Auschwitz, you know, his testicles were crushed, and I mean, we can go on and go on. So these confessions that were given by SS personnel or camp guards or such under coercion or torture, those don't count. And it all goes back to these two pieces of evidence, Himmler's Posen speech and this Vancey Protocol. And when I look at this, The Posen speech has been proven to be, one, the audio recording is just a mismatch and unreliable, couldn't be admitted. And then we have the archivist saying that he did not use the word extermination in the speech. And then we have the Vancey Protocol, and I can use that evidence, which is what they use, to basically make my case that the Germans were pursuing a case we're not pursuing extermination. So I think that's critical. And then if we take your call, I want to really focus on this Vancey Protocol, because I think it proves that they were pursuing a policy not to exterminate the Jews, but were pursuing their overall objective to basically remove Jews from Europe. And there's no doubt that they wanted a Jew-free Europe, much like I would like to have a Jew-free United States. I make no mistake about that. I make no bones about that. I think we'd be far better off if we did not have a Jewish influence in the United States, because we have basically a Weimar America right now. But certainly they were not pursuing a government program of extermination, a Holocaust. And so my position is the evidence that they presented actually proves the opposite. So with that, I think we could take your call, and then I'd like to spend the rest of the time, because I doubt if very many people have actually read the Wannsee Protocol and looked at it, because the numbers in it, the evidence they use, actually undermine all of the other hyperbole they use.
Right. And, of course, you always have these people who say, well, but I saw the bodies. We saw all those bodies.
Talk about those bodies.
All righty. Let's take Roger in Kansas. Roger, welcome to the program. Quick.
Thank you very much. There's a couple little pieces of data here that may be of interest. Now, listening to the show, I just looked up, like I long meant to, the term Holocaust in dictionary. Number one, it's from the Greek holos, whole, and kostos, burnt. Number one definition is a burnt sacrifice or offering, the whole of which was consumed by fire. And then I would refer to people to Stephen's testimony, Acts 7:43, where the high priest of Zionism, according to the rituals of Moloch and the human sacrifice offerings of God Remphan, their God permitted them to use substitutes like goats and lambs. And I would point to the song, a popular song of the time, "A Poor Little Lamb Lost Its Way, Ba, Ba, Ba." So I think it's very thinly veiled occult meaning of the term Holocaust. And that's all I had. So.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Roger.
Uh-huh.
Rodney, you have any comments?
No, I think, they tried to wrap this up, they've used this term Holocaust, and it is such a polarizing and emotional term, and they have tried to essentially, what Jews have tried to do is try to make World War II all about them, essentially dominate the narrative. And, I was up late one night working on some notes in the TV. I'll use this as an example. Here was a TV show. It was an infomercial. Here is this poor, suffering, starving Holocaust survivor, starving in Israel. Please send some money. And I looked at that and I said, what? Here they were soliciting for money in the United States for a starving Holocaust survivor in Israel, and gave an 800 number. So I called up. I called up and I said, excuse me, I'm calling about the donations for the starving Holocaust survivor. And, oh, yes, how much can we put you down for? And I said, nothing. Haven't you gotten enough from the Germans already? And I hung up. And I mean, I was so appalled that to the degree in which they will do this. And I'm sure
I think all of the listeners on today's program ought to call the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum and ask them about this article and start challenging some of their theories.
Here's what I would encourage your listeners to do. They could do two things. One, each one of your listeners should call their congressman and senator and ask that the Holocaust Museum be self-funded. Taxpayer dollars should not be funded that. And two, taxpayer dollars should not go for funding the preservation of Auschwitz, the $7 million that Hillary Clinton pledged to preserve Auschwitz.
The Holocaust Museum is an agency of the federal government, and that there are senators who actually sit on the board of directors.
What I would encourage, and I'm preparing a letter which I will be posting on my website, and they can be free to clone that letter. The federal government has the ability to spin that museum off and make it self-funding. They can create a private foundation over a period of time. And if it's not self-funded, we don't let Israel pick up the tab. Let me tell you, three Hollywood Jews in Hollywood could pay the tab on that operating expense, off of their weekend, playboy.
Right. So five congressmen and five senators were and still are part of the commission the 27-person advisory board.
Yeah, there is no need. There's absolutely no need to have that in the United States, have the taxpayer dollars paying for that. And what I would encourage, I'll have that letter posted on my website here probably this weekend. I'm working on it. It's been a pet project of mine for quite some time. And I actually will be posting, you know, their appropriations for the last 5 years as well. What I'm asking is that they spin that off and make that a private self-sustaining foundation. Hey, Congress, the Republicans have been wanting to make PBS self-funded for years. I agree with them. But let's make the Holocaust Museum self-funded as well. Spin that one off as well. It's called the, you have the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It should not get any public funding. Well, they can create the Corporation for the Holocaust Museum or whatever. That's fine. Let all the Jews in Hollywood and New York fund that themselves out of their own pocket. And anyway, getting to the Wannsee Protocol, because that is the one, inevitably, if you're in a discussion with a Holocaust follower, you know, Holocaustianity or whatever, like I say, there are people that will accept the Holocaust as their personal Lord and Savior, including Western, you know, white Western Christians, which is just, you know, I find really, really interesting. But they inevitably default to this Wannsee. Well, they had a meeting called the Wannsee, and they planned it out. They mapped it out. Well, a professor at the University of Alabama actually had access that Wannsee Protocol, and he did do an accurate translation. And I actually have it in front of me, and I think it's interesting for purposes of context. There was 15 attendees at Wannsee. 5 died during the war. 1 disappeared. That was the head of the Gestapo, Heinrich Mueller. There's been interesting theories as to what happened to him. 2 were executed by the Poles after the war. 1 was executed in Israel, which is Adolf Eichmann, in the 60s. And then 6 survived the war and essentially were not prosecuted and lived into ripe old age. One of them was an SS general, Otto Hoffmann, who headed the SS Race and Settlement Office. And he actually headed up an entity called the American Friendship Agency, which was basically a front for the CIA. The last surviving Wannsee member was Gerhard Klopfer. He died in 1987. None of those that survived, the six, were ever prosecuted for basically participating in Wannsee. None of them were. So this Wannsee was such an incriminating. If Wannsee was the event that, you know, created the final solution, you would think that every single participant that was alive at the end of the war in 1945 would have been rounded up and essentially put in prison for life or executed. That was not the case at all. You have 6 of them that lived until, you know, the last one died in 1987, and then General Hoffman, he was working for a CIA front group. But if you look at the protocol as to what it says, and I always ask people when they say, well, they met it, they had this meeting. Have you read the document? Have you read it, what they were talking about? Well, no, haven't, you know. It says they're going to kill the Jews. Well, it basically says 2 things, and I'm going to summarize it. I'm going to go through this document because it's not very big. It's the minutes. There was 1 surviving set that was in the representative of the Foreign Office's safe, and that was recovered, and it was translated. And it talks about, it says, the chief of the security police and SD will essentially be charged with 2 of the following points. A, the expulsion of the Jews from every sphere of the life of the German people, and the expulsion of the Jews from the living space of the German people. That's consistent with the NSDAP policy. Then you go down, it says, by order of the Reichsmarshal. Now, bear in mind, this meeting was arranged because Hermann Göring had issued a directive to Reinhard Heydrich to arrange this meeting and to promulgate a program on the Jewish matter during wartime. Final solution wasn't necessarily you. There's a misconception that, you know, they were used the final solution in terms of execution or genocide. That's not the case. But it says, by order of the Reichsmarshal, a Reich Central Office for Jewish Immigration was set up in January of 1939. And the chief of security police and SD was entrusted with the management. Its important tasks were to make all necessary arrangements for the preparation for the increased immigration of the Jews, to direct the flow of immigration, and to speed up the procedure of immigration of each individual case. So you have documented that the Germans were making every effort to promulgate and to ease the immigration of Jews from Germany, right up until 1939, the beginning of the war. The aim of this was to cleanse German living space of Jews in a legal manner. Now, they will get hung up around the word cleanse, but they're not talking about executing anything. They're talking about immigration. You can't say that immigration is the same thing as genocide or execution. They go on further down, and they start documenting numbers. Now, what's interesting is at Nuremberg and subsequent trials, they are always using, well, the German records were indicating that, you know, that this many Jews were, or this many people were executed. Well, the Wannsee Protocol talks about the number of people they were talking about. Approximately 360,000 were in Germany proper on the 30th of January, 1933, 147,000 were in Austria. They're actually providing numbers. And what's interesting in this protocol, Deanna, is as it goes down, it goes further down, they're talking about in the other spheres of German influence, which I'll get to. If you map those numbers and you do a correlation between those numbers and the official, what they call the displaced person reports by the Allies after the war, it actually undermines the number, you know, the 6 million number, first of all, which has been thoroughly debunked. Absolutely. If you actually document, you know, the Germans were meticulous and accurate in terms of record keeping. If you actually run the numbers that the Germans had developed, had run in both the number of persons in their in Germany and in the occupied nations and their sphere of influence, and then you match up the number of displaced persons, the displaced persons reports and the Red Cross reports, there is no way in the world the 6 million number holds up, a 4 million number holds up, or even a 3 million or 2 million number holds up. It doesn't matter. You know, the math, the science doesn't work. The math just doesn't add up.
In fact, the New York Times in 1992 said that the number of Jews who died during the war in Europe was something like 38,000.
Right. So they go down, so they go further into this protocol, and I'll post this. I'm going to post this when I post the show on my website. And I don't know, Deanna, if you have the actual translated text of the Wannsee Protocol, but I'll be happy to email it to anybody.
Oh,
but
I would love to have it.
This was done, I gotta say, and I communicated with this professor, and I asked him if this was an accurate translation, or did he actually do any modifications? And this is an actual accurate translation that he done over there. And I said, well, this is kind of interesting. This is very enlightening, because they're not talking about gas vans. He says, no, actually, they're not talking about gas vans or anything of that nature in here. Well, anyway, then they move in and they talk about the economics, and you know, there's this big brouhaha, and I was hoping to talk about this within the second debate with Condit about the agreement that was made in the Reich's Foreign Office, the transfer agreement, and they've even talked about this in here about the exchange agreement in allowing during the immigration. Well, anyway, here they talk about. Approximately 11 million Jews will be involved in the what they call the final solution. And this is the first time where they talk about, and this is where the boogeyman comes in, that the proponents, the advocates, what I call the advocates of the Holocaust there talk about. When they talk about the final solution, they talk about, and this is where their numbers, they talk about in Germany proper, they talk about 131,800, but they were including Mischlings and others. They go down Austria, 43,000. The numbers are all added in here. So in all, total, all, including the occupied zones of Russia, bear in mind this meeting took place in 1942, they were talking about 11 million people, 11 million that they had to deal with. And then they move into what they were planning to do. And this is incredible. This is what's important, because everybody says, well, at Wannsee, they developed a final solution. Yeah, the word final solution is in the protocol, but not a final solution for any sort of mass or systematic mass execution or genocide of any of people. They talk about they were going to put them to work, which, you know, probably to Jews, that is genocide. They'd actually have to work on something besides a calculator. But it says they were going to the breakdown of Jews residing in the European part of the USSR, and they were focusing there, and the trades was approximately agriculture 9.1%, urban workers 14.8%, in trade 20%, and employed by the state 23.4%, and in medical profession, the press, theater, and other, which is non-working trades according to this report, 33%. I mean, they were basically documenting who these people were and what they did. I mean, if they were just, Deanna, if they were just going to execute them, why did they care about their skills and what kind of work they could do? They just, I mean, they were going to great lengths. Now we go down.
We do have a 3-minute break, then we'll be right back.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Deanna. Our guest today has been Rodney Martin. He is the director of Worldview Foundations. That website is wvfoundations.org. Okay, we have about 3 minutes.
Finish up here. Here's three important points. It says in the Vance Protocol, it says that Jews will be allocated according to age and sex for labor on roads and other projects. It also says specifically, it is not intended to evacuate Jews over age 65, but to send them to old age ghettos. So, I mean, they weren't even going to touch those. They go on, and they are meticulous in talking about interacting with other nations such as Italy and Hungary, and they actually had assigned representatives at the meeting. But then they go on and they talk about the legal constraints, and they talk about treatment of persons of mixed blood and the exemptions. And they were meticulous in this protocol. And this is where Wilhelm Stuckart, who was the Interior Ministry and had subsequently worked in the German Department of Justice, he was a co-author of the Nuremberg Decrees. And he was at the Wannsee Conference. And he is probably, he's noted in here several times about maintaining and complying with German law. And they make notations in here that German law had to be followed, and there's detailed information in here about who was exempt. There were specific exemptions on, you know, persons of mixed blood of the first degree married to persons of German blood. If their marriage has resulted in children, they would be exempted. So, you know, you have situations which results in, you know, when the Russians arrived in Berlin, you actually had, you know, Germans, Jews that were wearing the star because they were married to Germans. Their children were but they were exempted under Wannsee. That's why, you know, they were in their houses. Yet the New York Times article classifies their houses as camps. It's completely inconsistent. And so when I talk about earlier, when I was talking about Wannsee, I can actually use their chief piece of evidence to debunk their own claim. There was no, Deanna, and my closing comment is there was absolutely no evidence. And there actually was no systematic government program by the Third Reich to engage in genocide and to eradicate Jews or anybody else. Their policy was consistent from their 1930 and flowed from their 1935 Nuremberg decrees. People died in camps mainly because of the Allied terror bombing, and the deaths did start to spike in, you know, mid 43, and especially in 1944. And in fact, I'll go a step further. The evidence that is presented by people who promote the Holocaust as being a fact actually debunks it when you actually analyze it with a critical eye and look at all of the documents and look at original sources. The Wannsee Protocol itself is very clear. They're talking about complying with German law, complying with the Nuremberg race laws, and they're talking about exempting old, you know, Jews, full-blood Jews of age 65, putting them in essentially retirement ghettos. The New York Times article counted ghettos as being a German creation. Jews had lived in ghettos prior, you know, for centuries prior to the Third Reich even coming into being in 1933. Basically hogwash. It's an attempt to continue the Holocaust narrative, and it needs to be confronted.
Exactly. All righty. Well, thank you very much for being on the program today, and I think we've got you scheduled again next week. Thank you very much. And thank you, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.